I would suggest we st so you can grab this notebook. If you're on Symmetry, logged in on JupyterHub, do is, where is that? You should, when you log in, you and start a server, you'll have a screen like this. So if you go under the new drop-down menu, at the very bottom is Terminal. You do that, you can then go and grab the file from me. So you can go cp squiggle dlang slash python dash numpy and copy it to your own home directory. So, oh, that doesn't work for me because this is the same file. Okay. And then if you flip back to or close that tab, you should see that file appear in your directory and you can open it up and then follow along. However, I think I am going to start from a blank notebook and actually type in the things that I want to say, so that I go at a better pace and don't just like scroll past the screen. And then you can see the mistakes I make and we can just be a little bit more dynamic. and I printed it out so I know what I know what you are at least are looking at. So again, since we're a small crew today, we can definitely be more adaptive, and if you're something's too slow, too fast, you can fix it. All right, so has anybody used have you used NumPy in your work before? SciPy, Matplotlib? Yeah? Okay, so you've sort of like seen it, but wouldn't mind a refresher? Or okay, well I'll start, and if it's too slow or too fast, tell me and I'll adjust. Okay, so there's a couple of main reasons that the NumPy project exists. And basically it's that although Python includes a lot of things built in, a good numerical library and mathematical library is kind of not really a strength. So the NumPy project was created to kind of fill that void. And it's really the like a core part of the toolbox for using NumPy for science. okay, so let's have a look at before we get into that for a second, let's have a look at the math built-ins. So
Hate to derail this.
yeah, no.
I probably should have sorted this out before I came, but I'm still having trouble getting into.
Symmetry not going? Or JupyterHub, yeah.
Well, so I managed to get there.
Okay.
But
Eric
my
can try to
just
sort
have
you
one
out.
quick. Yes, thanks. I appreciate your help. It's the same login as I use on my call.
Okay, so now, as you might know, Python has a huge built-in library of functions. And there is a math library. But it's a little bit minimal. Like it has, so if I look under the math library, it has things like, ceiling and floor and remainders and exp and log and a couple of things like that, but it's pretty minimal. So it really just doesn't like provide all of the things we need. It provides a bit of a basis. But another kind of main reason that the NumPy project is really popular is that it lets you do vectors and arrays and matrices and things like that. okay, so if we, let's see. So if you want to using the built-in one, you go import math, then you have math.sine. You can compute math.sine of one. But, and we saw last week that if you wanted, you could create, you can create a list with, you know, 1, 2, 3. But if you try to run math.sign on that list, it doesn't work, right? Math.sign only takes single scalars, and that's all it does. So if you wanted to, you know, run the, compute the sign for everything in a list, you would have to go through element by element and say, compute the sign on the first thing, second thing, third thing. So we saw last week that you can do that with a comprehension. You can go math.sign x for x in your list. And you know, that works, but it's pretty clunky. So so yeah, basically one of the strengths of NumPy is improving the way this works. Okay, so almost universally in Python code, NumPy is imported like this. I'm gonna just create a couple of blank spaces to work in. So it's almost always imported like this. So import NumPy as NP. Just an abbreviation. It's pretty common. I guess 5 characters for NumPy is too many. 2 is just fine. So you'll see this everywhere. And that means that then you get a bunch of, so there's now a bunch of functions available, like np.sign exists, and a bunch of other, you know, basic functions like that. now, probably the most important, well, as I said, you know, handling, one of the strengths is handling arrays of data. So I'm going to talk about that data type a bunch. So that is called array in NumPy. So you can create an array by going like with this function called np.array, and you can pass it a list. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, and that creates an array. Let me show you a couple of things. So here, I passed it a couple of floating point values and a couple of integers, and yet the array that it created has all floating point values, right? So an array has all of the elements of the array are the same type. You can find out what that type is with a dot d type. So in this case, it says it's a float 64. So that means, you know, what you would call a double in C, so 8-byte float. They have, you can call length on them, and they also have a dot shape thing that says what the shape of the array is. In this case, it's a vector, like a one-dimensional array of size 4. okay, so other common ways of creating array objects are with this function called linspace. This is used all the time for making plots and things, especially.
Going back, and the arrays in NP also carry strings and that sort of thing?
Yeah, they can.
Do you know how to access if you try to put in things like floats and integers and strings?
Yeah, good question. Let's find out. So I think, oh, that's interesting. So apparently if you create one with a string and an int, it decides that the whole thing ought to be strings, which is an interesting choice.
I guess one can easily convert to the other, but not the other way around, so.
Yeah.
Number of nine strings, maybe.
Yeah, I guess that's right. So I'm not sure actually what it does if you try to create, so imagine you try to create it with a string and a function. Then it creates an array that's type is object. Like, so it's like an anything. So that's odd. But you know, basically the use for arrays is when you're basically dealing with uniform data types. Okay, so going back to Linspace is used all the time for creating series. So you go from for creating like a set of values that are linearly spaced between a start and an end. So say we want to start at 0 and go to 20 and create, you know, 30 values between that. That creates an array that has 0 for its first element, 20 for the last, and length 30. And they're kind of uniformly spaced. So that's, you know, it's used all the time when making plots because you want to, you know, produce 500 points tracing out a curve or whatever. Okay, now the nice thing is you can, let me call this, I'm gonna call this T. There's, I'm gonna make 10 elements long to make it a little bit easier to deal with. Okay, so there's 10 values between 0 and 2 pi. Now if I run np.sign on that, it goes element by element and computes the sign on each element. So it's really handy. you can also do all of the other standard operations you might expect. So you can, you know, add 4 to every element in an array, or take the sign and square it. Yeah, let's take the sign, square it, take the cos, square it. A really slow way of computing 1. You know, so then suddenly you can do operations on big arrays of values with really compact code. It doesn't have to say, oh, go through every element in it and add it up. So, you know, it just makes this, as far as writing code that's easy to read and understand, it's a nice feature. Okay. Another couple of things for creating arrays. Oops. Make some space for myself. So np.zeros creates an array that's just full of zeros to begin with. So you can give it the size. So say I want an array that's 5 elements long. Boom. You can also say, if you want to create it in a different data type, you can say that as well. So if you specify it, you can say, I want it to be integers, then it comes out ints. You can also, well, I won't go into too many details. now, you can also create two-dimensional arrays. So if you go 5, 2, it'll create, as you might expect, an array that's has 5 rows and 2 columns. So it always goes this row then column ordering. And similarly to zeros, there's one called ones that creates an array full of the value 1. So like so. Questions, thoughts, complaints?
I assume the dimensionality thing is you could be like 5, 2, 3 and...
Yep, exactly, it does. So yeah, I'll talk a little bit about converting, yeah, sizes and shapes and converting between things. Okay, and then so then, you know, if you run, okay, right. So you might ask, well, what if I want to do some linear algebra? So I'm going to create an array Oh, I forgot another array creator, which is called arrange, that creates an array whose values go up to a, go up like cover a range. So if I go like that, it has values, integers from 0 up to 8. Now, you can take that and reshape it. So if I wanted to make that into an array that had, that was 4 by 2, it can go like that, use the reshape for that. And it takes the same elements and just says, ah, now you're a, now I'm gonna act as though you're a 4 by 2 matrix. Okay, so R there looks like a 4 by 2 matrix. And then what if I create a vector that has values 7, 8? So I've got, whoops. Thought I'd, so I made a mistake. So here I, so here I thought, oh, I'm gonna reshape it. But I reshaped it, but then didn't save the result anywhere. So, you know, Jupyter nicely printed it out for me, but didn't actually save that variable anywhere. So I'm actually gonna go R. That. Okay, so now R is this 4 by 2 thing. So if I go R.shape, it should show me that it's 4 by 2. And V is this vector that has shape 2. Now, you'd think, I can go R times V, and that'll do a matrix vector multiply. But it doesn't. So it's instead done an element by element multiply. It might actually be a little, well, let's see, what did it do? Right. So we had 0, 2, 4, 6 along here, and we multiplied that by 7. So that becomes 0, 2 times 7, 4 times 7, 6 times 7. And then the second element was 8, so it became 8 times 3, 8 times 5, 8 times 7, right? So it did element by element multiply, but it said, you've got a 4 by 2 and a 2 by nothing. I can like just expand that array and make them the same shape and then multiply them element by element. Like, it's being so helpful. Not doing the thing we were expecting it to do at all. So this is actually used all the time in NumPy and a nice feature, but it can be confusing as well. It doesn't always do what you'd expect. So that's called broadcasting, and basically it will try to find compatible array shapes that will work and then do things element by element. So basically, the rule is basically things are always element by element if you do, unless you do something sort of special that doesn't operate that way. Okay.
Is there a way to ask the system not to do that?
Not really. It's pretty built in for how. Yeah, and it's pretty built in as far as like how things. So it doesn't go to extreme lengths to try to jam things into being the same shape. So usually this doesn't have, like usually it won't work by accident. So for example, there's a dot T sort of operator thing that gives you that takes an array and takes the transpose. And now, so if you tried to take the transpose of that thing and multiply it by V, it doesn't work because it's like, these operands are size 2 by 4 and 2, and I don't know how to make those the same shape. So there are a bunch of rules about what it's willing to do to broadcast arrays to make them the same shape. I don't actually even know the rules because I typically don't rely on them, and I end up kind of writing things out to be more explicit and make sure that I understand when I read my code later that I'm not relying on too much magic, and I just kind of sort of try to write out what's going on. But that's...
Presumably there's a way to do matrix multiplication.
Yeah. I think it is called... So there's np dot dot, which I think does dot product of two arrays, which if they're 1D arrays, then it's an inner product. If they're 2D arrays, it's matrix multiplication.
Mm-hmm.
If they're whatever. So if that's an N by D array, and that's a 1D array, it's a sum product. So I think if we go np dot dot R and V, it'll do the right thing. So that did one of, yeah, that's the matrix multiplier. Okay, so so another thing that comes up all the time in using NumPy is indexing arrays. So some things, let me see. I'm going to create a better test one. I'm going to call it A 10 times A range of 12 and make it 4 by 3. There we go. Okay, so now we saw last week that if you want to pull out just a single element of a list, you can use it indexing starting from 0. In 2D arrays in NumPy, it's first row, then column. So if you wanted the element at the in the third column there and second row would be 2, 1, that's 70. Now you can also select ranges. So you could grab rows 0 through 2 and columns 1 through 3, say. And those are non-inclusive. So 0 through 2 means grab these two, the first two rows, and 1 through 3 means grab this starting at 1 and not including 3, so 1 and 2. So it pulls out this, that like upper right-hand quadrant. There's a bunch of shortcuts. So if you, let's see, there's 0 through 2, colon just means everything in that row. So if you wanted to grab out rows 0 through 2 and all of the columns, you can use colon for that. There's a weird shorthand where minus 1 means the last element in the array, and minus 2 means the second last. So if you wanted to grab everything except the last column, let's grab everything except the last column. So all rows, and from 0 up to minus 1, which looks bizarro, but it says, basically says grab all of the rows on columns starting at 0 up to but not including the last one. So that drops off the last column. Now, if you if one of these colon operators, like if you're starting from 0, you can omit it. So you say grab everything and everything up to, but not including the minus, the last one, that write that way. And you know, if you write minus 2, it'll grab everything except the two last ones. Okay, so lots of like indexing tricks like that. Okay, what else do I want to say? Okay. Okay, I'm gonna skip past the new axis stuff because that is confusing. So in addition to, okay. Okay, so in addition to indexing things by element, another really common thing you'll see is you can index arrays. Let me show you one other thing first. So let me create a 1D array. Whoops. So if we try to, you might imagine that you could do this, like you could say, I want elements 1, 3, and 5. Seems like something might work. But that isn't going to work because that's the way you index a three-dimensional vector. On the other hand, if you turn that into an array, then it will actually work. And this is sort of like, this is like another broadcasting thing where one of the operations you can do is with one array and another array is index into it. So this is pulling out, it's creating a new array by pulling out from V elements 1, 3, and 5. So pulling out this one, that one, and making a new array out of it. So that is handy, but can also be confusing. And kind of similarly, you can go, if you do a comparison, so say V is greater than or equal to 30, that will return that'll run element by element and say, are each of those values greater than 30? So no, 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 yes, 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 yes. And you can then use that to, you can use that true and false array to index into an array if you wanted. So for example, you could go, I want all of the elements in V that are greater than 30. And that's going to return a new array that has, it's basically created this Boolean array and used it to index into the original V and pulled out just the elements that pass that test. So this is used all the time. Okay, so at this point I was going to move on to SciPy and Matplotlib. Any other questions or thoughts or concerns about arrays?
One of the things last time with lists is that we had these append and extend type operators.
Right. So arrays aren't as flexible about that. So there's a few different things. I think there is an np.append, append values to the end of the array. I actually don't end up using it very much. So let's see, if we had V, I think we can, if we take V and append 99, I think it does what you'd expect. It creates a new array with the appended on the end. If we try to append a list, that actually works too. You could then glue two vectors together, so you can go append VV. There's also this trio of called np.hstack, where you give it a pair of things and a pair of vectors, or rather a list or an iterable of vectors, and it stacks them together horizontally, or you can do them vertically. So there's vstack, whoop, Ah, no, don't leave. Stay on page. There's np.vstack, which does the same thing vertically. So it creates a, you know, creates a 2D array out of 1D arrays. So there's a, yeah, there's a bunch of things like that. Okay. I'm going to move to matplotlib. Now, one of the nice features is that matplotlib can do these inline plots. But in order to turn that on, there's a kind of magic incantation, which is percent matplotlib inline. That actually only works in Jupyter. In regular Python, that's not a thing. And then we can actually import matplotlib itself. Now, matplotlib actually, I think, was one of the reasons that Python became popular, at least in machine learning where I came from, because they basically re-implemented all of MATLAB's plotting with the same interface. So as a result, there's sort of the way to use it that looks like MATLAB, and then there's a kind of more proper way. And since I'm true to my roots, even though they're not good roots, I use the kind of improper way. So for me, it's import PyLab as PLT. And this is another, like, PyLab is too many characters to type, but PLT is okay. I'm not sure who exactly decided that, but that's the convention. I think of it as plot in my mind. So now we can go plt.plot. Let's create an array from 0 to 4 pi with 400 points.
She missed what you meant about this inline matplotlib. What was the story there?
It just makes it so that it, like, immediately shows your plots inline. And it's just a magical incantation. I don't actually know what happens if you don't do that. It might just work by default in our current Jupyter Hub setup.
Without it, it does the same thing.
Does it? Okay. Apparently it's
particular.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, good. So that's good to know. Don't actually need the magical incantation. All right, so if you so plt.plot, if you give it an x and y, two arrays that are the same shape, it will plot them on the x and y coordinates. You can either tell it what style to use with a kind of magical string. So R minus means red line. Like B colon means dotted line. G minus minus means green dashed line. You can also go.
Q exclamation mark.
Good point. Nothing, I think. Yeah, nothing.
Oh.
It means blah. So there, it's a code, but it only goes so far. I think yo is yellow dots, yellow circles. This is all, like, inherited from the MATLAB interface. A more kind of Python style way of doing it is you can say, line style maybe equals minus minus to make a dash, and color equals, and then you can make, if you, you can either go color equals B, or you can do like a RGB one, so you could go like red and a a little bit of blue to make a kind of pinkish color. And then there's a bunch of code words like LW for line width. A nice one is alpha, so you can make things sort of like semi-transparent. So you can go alpha equals 0.3 to make it sort of like faint. So this is kind of handy if you're trying to plot two different curves. You can make one thick and faint and the other like solid color and thin. So, you know, for example, if you want to plot the like sine and cos together and make them show up easily when printed and things like that. Okay, so then other handy things are if you go label equals, you can attach a string to it. And if you just do that, nothing happens. But then if you later go plt.legend, it'll add a little legend that has those that sort of marks the two things. By default, it'll pick a place to put it. But you can also tell it to go in like one of the corners or whatever. So I think if you go plt.legend, I forget what it is. You can go with loc for location equals upper right, for example. And then it'll put some legend in the top left. Other things include plt.xlabel for the label for the x-axis. And y label for y axis. And then the all important plt.savefig to actually save the figure as. And I think you can, depending on the file name you give it, it'll save it in different formats. So I believe that PDF saving is built in. So it's kind of handy. So you can now have a PDF figure for your paper.
Change the origin, change the x-axis to the middle of the graph.
Sorry, say again?
Change the x-axis to the middle of the graph.
Oh, like, yeah, good question. I don't know how to, like, so that the ticks are in the middle? I don't know how to do that.
Actually, just the axis, maybe the text is also at the bottom.
Yeah, good question. I am not sure how to do that, actually. So there's one I often use is x horizontal line. So you can put a line at 0 with color black alpha half. So that draws this kind of like nice guideline at 1. If you want to, yeah. So, I end up doing things like that an awful lot. Maybe you want a fainter guideline at 0.2, at a half. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, then there's a bunch of, let's see. Kind of wonder what else I should talk about.
Is there a way to do a 3D plot like in Mathematica?
Yes, yeah. Let's see. So I think that if you go, let's see. So let's try to make a spiral. okay, so I'm going to make times that go from 0 to 5 pi. X is going to be a cos. Yy is going to be a sine. And oh no. yeah, spiraling out in radius, and that is going to be that. And then I think if you go plt.plot with a three-dimensional thing. Nope, it's not right at all. that did something weird. That made two different lines. Is it plot 3D? All right, I have to do 3D plot matplotlib. There's, I think, a little bit of, yeah, right. Okay, so I thought for some reason that it would do that there was a built-in for 3D plots, but it's apparently not part of matplotlib. You have to go, there's a like toolkit. Let's try this. Where's my notebook? There it is. Axes 3D. And then what do we do? Ah, there we go. Ha. Okay, so yeah, apparently 3D plots are not too hard to do with a little bit of Googling. This is one of the nice features that basically the matplotlib is like very popular, so it's usually easy to find things, instructions for doing things that you want with using old eGoogle. This is actually a bit of a different style of writing matplotlib. This is actually more proper. It's sort of like more like object oriented. So here they're like going plt.figure to create a new figure object. And then to that figure, they're saying add a subplot with a 3D projection that creates an axis. And then on that axis, make a plot. And then I think you can set the viewpoint. Set top view. Apparently, I don't know what it's called. Set. What does set top view do? I don't know. As you can pretty much tell, I don't make a lot of 3D plots in my work. But I'm sure, the interwebs will be very happy to tell you all about.
Do you do discrete plots?
Discrete. What do you mean? Like
just have a sample of discrete points on your right domain and then plot the dots.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like scatter plots or whatever. Yeah. So. Yeah. Definitely. So, plt.scatter is usually the way to go about that. So that lets you do, if you have, say, x and y points, you can set the color to be based on a third variable. So this is plotting my same spiral, except now using the y value to set the color. Or you can also set the plot size. So there, the dot sizes are growing larger based on the, let's make them much bigger based on that other coordinate. So that's probably the most common way to do it is this plt.scatter. There's a bunch of, I guess the other thing I wanted to talk about at least or mention was this SciPy package. And the NumPy and SciPy packages are actually created by the same overall organization called SciPy or scipy.org. So if you go to docs.scipy.org, it has documentation for both NumPy and SciPy. And the split between what's in NumPy and what's in SciPy is not always necessarily obvious, or and there's a little, things cross over a little bit, but the most useful, or at least the things I end up reading all the time, are the NumPy reference guide and SciPy reference guide. So SciPy has things like ones that I use all the time include Fourier transforms, interpolation, linear algebra, ND image for image processing, stuff like that. Optimize for like doing function optimization. Some of the .signal for signal processing, and sparse linear algebra. Oh yeah, and statistics. So tons of those things are get used all the time. I don't know. We're like getting close to the hour, so we could wrap up, or we could dive into one of these things if anybody's interested. Kind of, I guess, could leave it up to you. You can jump into Matplotlib and histograms, or call it a day. It's up to you.
I could point out the thing with NumPy arrays and then the colons and square brackets, and when it's copied and when it's not copied, when you modify things. That is always highly confusing.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can go back to that for 2 minutes, it might save someone speaking.
Okay. you might have to. I'll pretend that I'm that I knew that was going to happen when we get the surprising things happening. Okay, so I guess what you mean is
you define an array, it equals NumPy array of 1, 2, 3 or something, sure, array 3.
Okay, I've got an array.
And then you say B equals A.
Oh yes, okay, B equals A.
Modify A.
I'm gonna set,
and
I've modified A. Oh look, B is modified as well.
And there's another way you can assign things, where you assign not the array, but the content of the array.
With,
I don't know, with square bracket and colon, I guess, because that's the whole thing, yeah.
Right.
You must know the syntax for that.
Okay, so there's another way to, well, many different ways to create a copy of an array. So let's go, so if you go a.copy, it'll actually go through and make a full copy of all of the elements. And now if you modify A, C does not change, it's been a full copy. So what Eric was saying is you can also go, instead of doing .copy, you can go like that. You use the colon operator to grab the whole thing. And that apparently makes a copy. Nope.
Okay, but you can use the colons on the, okay, now I'm just confusing people. I think you can use the colons on the left after defining B.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right. So you could go B equals, there's another one like zeros and ones. There's another one called empty that just creates an empty array. There's even, and there's also a zeros, zero is like and one's like that creates an array that's like the same shape as another one, same shape and type.
Uh-huh.
So you can create an empty array that's like A and then set everything in E to be from A. And now since E, like you created a new one, if you change A, then whoops, then E doesn't change. So I guess the you could ask, why on earth does it do that?
That's exactly. That's what you're asking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so yeah. it's a good question.
I think the upshot is if you want to modify an array, copy it explicitly, or you use a programming style where you never modify an array, just create a new array all the time. Otherwise, if you're getting confused, just make a copy.
Also, if you do any operation on it, then it becomes a copy. So if you go A plus zero, it will create a new array. But that's not a really common idiom. I would use dot copy because it's very clear what's going on. Thanks for throwing in a terrible misfeature as the last thing we talk about. That's very encouraging.
You warn people about it.
Yep.
But apparently there isn't.
Yep.
I mean, that feels like the sort of thing you definitely want to do, right? Just, or even just something like, you know, A is equal to A modified somehow.
Yeah.
But I guess you say if you modify it, then it makes a copy.
Yeah, that's right. If you do an operation on it, then the result is a new thing.
So what does the concept of broadcasting actually
do? Yeah. So I guess it means, so one way of thinking about it is, so imagine, you know, you have an array, and if you want to, you know, say add 100 to it, if you want to add 100 to, you know, an array, you have to have a concept of what that means, you know, that you want to do it element wise. So broadcasting basically is just like a set of rules that say how you can take arrays or things that are different sizes and do element-wise operations on them. So for example, if you had, let's see, if you create D that's also an array of size 10, then you can run element-wise operations on them. If one is like a 2D array and one is a 1D vector, but they have the last dimension is the same size, then it can still do an operation on them. So, you know, so you say you create a squared and a cubed. So I think we can then add b to that. So even though it's now a 3x10 vector, you can add a 1x10 vector to that, and it runs element-wise. So broadcasting basically just defines the rules about how you can apply operations to arrays of different shapes.
And also, can you do the usual matrix modification?
Yeah. So that, it just ends up being called np dot dot.
Oh, I see.
Is how, yeah, so that goes. And then I should say there's numpy dot, so the numpy dot linalg package has all of the linear algebra things like SVDs and other, you know, all the other things you would expect. So they're like a handy place to look.
Oh, one thing I'd like to add. All these operations like adding arrays or SVD, they're not implemented in Python, they're implemented in system libraries. So it doesn't matter whether you write your code in Fortran or in Python, these routines would run at the same speed. So someone tells you that Python is slow, Python itself might be slow, but this SVD operation itself would run at exactly the same speed as other things.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other, yeah, and like one of them, the other kind of primary reason that NumPy is popular is exactly that. It lets you kind of write code that uses fast libraries without actually having to write C or Fortran code. All right, let's call it a day, I guess. Thank you for coming. And I think what's up next week is something entirely different. Is it Einstein Toolkit?
Einstein Toolkit, yes. It's an introduction to the Einstein Toolkit. That's a software framework for solving Einstein equations to simulate black holes, neutron stars, etc. You can run supercomputers, you can produce waveforms for LIGO, etc. Watch for the announcement.
And it's by a visitor, so.
Oh yes, we have Steve Brand visiting from the Louisiana State University as a presenter.
Yeah. So variety.
The machine learning one is not going
on. The machine learning one is later. Lauren Hayward is going to give the machine learning one, but it's going to be a few weeks later, late October, early November.
What will be the next step?
Pardon?
What will be the next tutorial?
The next tutorial will be the Einstein Toolkit. That's 1 week from now.
Nice.
I should post an updated schedule. Thank you.
Yeah, good point. Okay, thank you.